Hi, karaoke pals and podcast listeners. Before we get to the episode, I want to take a moment to address the June 24th Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. This decision stripped away the legal right to have a safe and legal abortion for anyone with the ability to become pregnant. Restricting access to comprehensive reproductive care, including abortion, threatens the health and independence of all Americans. This decision could also lead to the loss of other rights, contraception, marriage equality, and a whole host of other things we believe a free and just society needs to be considered and to remain a free and just society. To learn more about what you can do to help, go to choice.crd.co. We encourage you to speak up, take care, and spread the word.
Bad singers make things better.
The whole room roots for them, especially if they like obviously are feeling shy or they're feeling self-conscious at all. Everybody wants to get involved and hoot and holler and clap and sing along with them and give them that support so that it boosts their confidence. That's what I've always found. Or people that are like really interesting performers and really going along with the song, but not singing it well, or just singing it in a very, very different style, like a totally different interpretation. Those are always the most interesting because you don't know what they're going to do. Like, there's no telling where this goes. And that is great also. That is super fun. It keeps me on the edge of my seat and it keeps me really engaged and on the side of the performer. Like I'm being performed with and not at.
Hello and welcome back to The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly, the podcast that takes karaoke exactly as seriously as it should be taken. I'm your creepy karaoke host, Adam Wainwright.
And I am also creepy, but kind of sexy co-host, Ed Kennard.
The creepy and the sexy, I feel like, are a necessary combination. If I were to describe our podcast vibe using those kind of adjectives, it would be creepy and sexy. And I think that's appropriate for both of us.
Well, Adam, it is creepy how sexy you are, so that makes sense.
I was going to say it's creepy how sexy you are, Ed, or it's sexy how creepy you are.
That also might be true.
I guess that's what we do if we work in opposites right there. We have to go sexy. Ed, how are you? I know you had a big trip to Florida. You took a vacation. Tell me about it.
I got to go down to PodFest Expo in Orlando, which was a great time. Met so many wonderful people in the podcast space. Lined up a lot of people that I'm going to have you talk to on the show because everybody down there loved karaoke. And I got to hang out with Mike and Joe from Friday Night Karaoke because their company was sponsoring one of the events. And I got to sing at Howl at the Moon on a stage to like 500 people. It was wild and wonderful.
That's a blast. That sounds rad right there. So here's the question I have for you, though, Ed. So do these karaoke-loving podcasters have questions about karaoke, and how can they submit questions that they do have?
Well, some of them certainly do, and for you, our loyal poor singers, please hit our website up. There's a little red button in the bottom corner of the page that will take you to our pod inbox, and you can leave us a voicemail asking your burning karaoke advice questions there. And we would love to hear it, and we would love to feature your voice on our show talking about this thing that we all love.
Ed, what's an example of a good karaoke advice question? Like, if you're going to ask me a karaoke advice question, what question would come to mind right now? Like, so we can give them an example. Because I feel like without an example, people might be hesitant. So hit me with an example and I'll give you the response they can expect.
Adam, if I want to win over a crowd that I don't know, what kind of thing should I think about when picking my songs?
Just stripping. Just strip. That's going to be the answer. It's just a lot of stripping. Ed and I've done it. You can do it too. Done. See, karaoke advice. That's the flavor we're bringing to the show.
Please don't take his advice.
That should be a disclaimer too. Just never accept my advice. Hey, can I tell you about something that was really exciting for me in the past couple weeks here?
Yeah, absolutely. What's up?
I returned to karaoke. I did a singular karaoke. My brother got married in Kansas, so I found myself in Wichita, Kansas, and we had a free kind of evening after doing rehearsal dinner stuff, and I found the karaoke bar. And let me tell you, this place did not disappoint. I'm going to have to look up the name again because it was like an offshoot. I knew they had karaoke. So I just said, you know, Uber driver, take me to the karaoke. It was perfect. It was perfect. It was exactly what I wanted karaoke to be in that area. It was sort of divey. It had a really weird mixed crowd where I had four really old gentlemen that were sitting at a table right next to me. It featured a gentleman wearing a cowboy hat that had a cross on it that could sing like an angel that they called Pastor Jim. So it was just my type of crowd. I walked into this bar. Some dude looked at me and says, "You're here." Yeah. And I said, yeah, let's go. And kind of just matched that energy. It's definitely my type of space because it was divey enough. The karaoke was good. It sounded good in there. The KJ was great. And it wasn't necessarily the people I was with type of joint. So I was like, okay, we're going to do one and we can get out of here, guys. I get it. It's not your spot. But I had a blast, man. It just felt good. And I also found a place near me actually does karaoke on Thursday nights right now. So they kind of worked their way back in since the pandemic. So I'll be hitting that up sometime very soon.
I look forward to hearing a full report on that, Adam.
You're going to get a full report on it, Ed. Before you get a full report, I feel like you need to step up to a challenge.
I am always ready for your challenges.
Good, because I'm going to use this to transition very smoothly, might I say, to the karaoke trivia bullpen. So here's what you'll get. 5 trivia questions based on the episode's topic. There are 5 questions today, Ed. No tricks up my sleeve. There's no varying difficulties. You're going to get 5 questions. Each question is going to be worth 1 point. So the top score for any round is 5 points. If you get stuck, you can ask for 1 hit per game. If you get all the questions wrong, you can still win by answering the impossible question. Get that one right and you get all 5 points. But remember, even if you save your hint, there are no hints for the impossible bonus.
Adam, have you prepared something wonderful to kick this off?
Ed, I'm going to give you a clue of what we may or may not be talking about. I'm not going to give you the category. I'm just going to play you this stinger. Goodness gracious, I hope you're ready. I hope you, listening audience, are ready for what I prepared for the stinger today.
Hello. Is like a song.
You've outdone yourself, man.
I'm no Edda, but I thought I'd bring it to the table. So here's what we're going to talk about. Throughout the course of the show today, we're going to talk about songs that don't necessarily mean what you think they mean. We're talking to an author of Record Collecting for Girls. So putting all this together, what I wanted to do is I'm going to feature some kick-ass women in blues history.
Ooh, okay. Very specific. I love it.
Women and the blues is going to be today's topic. So Ed, what are you feeling today? I feel like you can do well in this because I feel like this is kind of your shit. So I think you can do well. And I don't think I went overboard with any of them.
Honestly, depending on how it's structured and what area you're drawing from, this might be a 4.
When I put it together, it was a 4, but there's a lot of really good information and a lot of really kick-ass people. I just wanted to feature them. Even no matter if you did well, I just wanted to get this information out there. So, Eddie, you ready to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
Great. So, question number 1. In 1920, this recording artist made blues history by becoming the first African-American to record blues vocals with a track called Crazy Blues. This happened when Perry Bradford, a famous black composer, persuaded the white executive at Oka Records, Fred Hagar, to record her. She is really where it all began. Not only was she a female unafraid to take charge and do something no one in her race had done before, but she did so with charisma and what seemed like heaven-sent aptitude. This blues powerhouse took the first step on a long, winding trail to prove to fellow African-Americans with a bad case of the blues that they could do something about it. Name that artist.
Is it Mamie Smith?
It is Mamie Smith. Good. You're off to a banging start. Mamie Smith. Well done, Ed.
You really are hitting my era of stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to slam it, baby. I'm going to slam your era. Question number 2. Now, shortly after Mamie Smith burst into the scene, the floodgates opened and made way for the mother of blues to find her way to the mic. Gertrude Ma Rainey bridged vaudeville and the authentic expression of Southern blues. She was renowned for vocal abilities, energetic disposition, and a moaning style of singing. From 1923 to 1928, she made over 100 records, including Bo Weevil Blues, Moonshine Blues, CeCe Ride Blues, Soon This Morning, and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Now, Ma Rainey was so influential that a play was written about her life, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, as part of a 10-play Pittsburgh cycle that chronicles the 20th century African-American experience. Name that playwright.
August Wilson.
August Wilson is it, Ed. Well done. Wonderful playwright. Some of the best monologues in history, like Jesus.
And fun fact, to interrupt real quick, the guy who gave us our theme song, Ben Dumb, was an extra in the film version of Fences.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
That was filmed in Pittsburgh too, right?
Yeah.
See, man, I do love some August Wilson and Ben Dumb. It's beautiful when things come together like that. But on the question number three, this artist, also known as the Empress of the Blues, made her mark in the music world during the 1920s and 30s thanks to her distinctly rich, robust, and hearty vocals. She has been regarded as the most popular blues vocalist of her era and has since influenced female singers from all walks of life, including Janis Joplin, who paid for her tombstone in 1970, more than 30 years after her death. Considered a legend and inspiration and one of the biggest voices of the century, her spirited tracks like Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out and Devil's Gonna Get You have truly transcended time. Name that artist.
That is Bessie Smith.
That is Bessie Smith. Correct, Ed. Yeah, like I said, I think I nailed your shit. And I think you're going to get number four here, too. She is the modern day blues queen. Her bottleneck slide guitar playing and vocal prowess has influenced an abundance of beings since the 70s and has seen her listed at number 50 on the Rolling Stone Greatest Singers of All Time list, as well as number 89 on their Greatest Guitarist of All Time. Having played alongside the majority of the blues' biggest male figures, including B.B. King, Buddy Guy, and John Lee Hooker, she's shown that when it comes to playing the guitar, gender doesn't mean a thing. I had the distinction of seeing her play at New Orleans Jazz Fest, and she is truly a master of her craft. No matter your opinion, she'll definitely leave you with something to talk about. Name that artist.
It's Bonnie Raitt.
I know. I worked on that little clue at the end there.
Is it Bonnie Raitt? And then I'm like, yes, it's Bonnie Raitt.
Yeah, I worked on that little clue. I think you might get a 5 for 5, Ed, because I think I set it up here. The last question. This woman is considered by some to be the ultimate queen of blues. Her thunderous combination of stomping, shouting, gospel, spiritual lyricism, and electric blues rock guitar made her a defining figure in the early development of rock and roll. Having influenced the likes of Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Elvis Presley, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, and Frank Turner. He even went as far as to record a track about this artist that appeared on his 2019 album, No Man's Land. Her most popular song may be My Journey to the Sky, but no snapshot could ever capture the legacy she left on the blues. Name that artist.
That's Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
That sure is, Ed.
I swept it.
You did.
Wow.
I thought I might have settled into your shit right there. You don't even need the impossible bonus. We haven't discussed what happens if you get 5 out of 5. With the impossible bonus, but would you like to try?
Yeah, I have to try.
Great, because this is not going to be it in your lane because it's the impossible bonus. I figured you would score well on the other ones. I was thinking more about our guest today, Courtney E. Smith, and her book, Record Collecting for Girls. I was like, I wonder who has the biggest record collection on earth. So, Jose Roberto Zero Alves Frites is widely known to have the largest record collection in existence with over 8 million. But that I didn't really care about that. What I wanted to know was what woman holds the record for the most vinyl in their position. It actually took a little bit of digging, but I think I pinned down the answer to one Spanish-born and living woman that has more than 50,000 recordings in her possession. Ed, who is that?
Oh, that's Mary. Mary Smith.
Yeah, the Spanish woman is Mary Smith, Ed. Congratulations. Her name is Alejandra Fierro Elita. It's the largest dedicated Latin and Caribbean music archive in the world, and it's built in part on Miami artists and institutions. Just to feature a little bit, Alita's musical journey began early in her life after she spent a summer in her mom's home country of Panama. At the age of 10, Alita went to live with her uncle in Panama, where she would hear boleros and tropical music and began her romance with the music. She began collecting albums in her late teens and forming the beginning of a lifelong pursuit. Her love for Panama is so strong, she started a music school, and she also plans to donate her entire music collection to University of California, Berkeley, in exchange for scholarships for Panamanian students. So I just thought it was really cool that she was going to donate so she can do some good. And I think it was just a really kind of cool story. Ed, you kicked ass. I thought you might kick ass today. I thought I was nailing exactly your shit. I was right.
And now you've probably learned some stuff about the blues that you didn't know before and have new things to listen to.
Yeah, I learned a ton of shit about the blues. It's always been like a kind of a fringe interest for me to a certain extent that I never really appropriately dived into, but I definitely want to continue now. What's our main topic today? Introduce us and get us started on this.
Obviously, we like to tie in our episode topic to our guest, but nobody needs to hear two cis men talk about women in music spaces or women in karaoke spaces. What can we actually add to that conversation? But Courtney E. Smith also did have a great podcast that is coming back for season two soon called Songs in the Key of Death, which is all about murder ballads. And from that, we jumped into something a little bit afield of that. Murder ballads are inherently creepy. Murder ballads don't always mean what you think that they mean, because the difference between the stories they're based on and what happens by the time songs are written and disseminated, a lot changes. So today, we're going to talk about songs at karaoke that don't mean what you think they mean.
I'm excited for this. And I was starting to dig into some of these and kind of, it's one of those things that I feel like you never think about until you do. And when you do think about it, it's like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, as you're going through. And I think we found some good examples.
Well, I think we should start with the obvious one, because you are planning a wedding and I know your first dance song is a secret and we're not allowed to know it until it happens.
No.
But I've been to weddings where the song that the couple danced to was Every Breath You Take by The Police.
Oh, man, that's going to be an interesting marriage.
So you know why that obviously is a bad call, Mr. I'm getting married and picking songs that I still won't tell one of my best friends and podcast partner about.
I won't tell anybody about it, their best friend, podcast partner. But I will say this, Every Breath You Take will not be playing at our wedding. And number two, it's for a very specific reason, because it's not as creepy as it gets. It's about obsession, right? And isn't that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, it's a stalky song. It's a stalker song.
A stalky song makes it sound like it's like asparagus or something like that. It's a song about asparagus. It's a stalky song.
Every veg you roast.
All the garlic you toast.
You get your vitamins. You're going to not eat sin. No, I don't know.
You're going to not eat sin. Man, you heard that here first, too. You're going to not eat sin. Wow. And I'm going to get us back on track now. If I had to ask you, what's Total Eclipse of the Heart about?
I actually know the answer to this. So do you want the answer that other people would say?
Yeah, I want the other people.
And don't get me wrong. Even from the original source, it is still kind of a love song.
Oh, it is a love song.
And that's what it's about. It's about an intense love, is what I think people would say.
Yes, it is. But if I were to get more specific with it and say it's an intense love between who, what would you, now you can answer as you know, but an intense love between who, Ed?
An ancient vampire and a young woman, written by Jim Steinman for a musical that was never done.
Yes, Nosferatu, the musical that never happened. Its original title was actually Vampires in Love. But if you ask Bonnie Tyler, she swears it's just about deep love between two people. Like, it's wild. I read that and I'm like, okay, vampires in love. That kind of just makes me want to do the karaoke more, though.
That explains our bad vampire accents that we tried at the beginning.
I think that's what I was going for, kind of was channeling. And tell me something creepy, though. Like, what's a good creepy one? I feel like Vampires in Love is just kind of interesting. Creep it up a little bit up on here.
Certain things in relationships are creepy. So I have a whole bunch of ones, but I'm going to start out with the one that was number one the week I was born. My Sharona by The Knack. It's like a nice, happy, bouncy, fun song. And in all fairness, it is a karaoke bop. But let's remember that this was a grown-ass man writing a song about a teenager.
Oh, good.
So when you know that, then I always get it up for the touch of the younger kind.
Yikes.
Really creepy.
It's exceptionally creepy. Let me share another wedding song, because I feel like this is something that needs to be discussed. Do you know anything about James Blunt and
You're Beautiful?
I just know he's real funny on Twitter.
Yeah, he is. Is he funny on Twitter?
Yeah, he's funny on Twitter. He really leans into the fact that people hate that song and trolls them.
That's great. Maybe this is where it came from, the information I pulled, because it sounds like this is him trolling his own song. But when you actually break down the song, it's kind of creepy. She was with another man, but I won't lose no sleep on that because I've got a plan. And really, the narrator of the song is really just about a drunk man stalking a woman on the subway. That's what You're Beautiful, your wedding song for some listeners out there, is about.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Drunk guy stalking a woman on the subway. That's from James Blunt himself explaining that. He told the Huffington Post about his own damn song and narrator his own damn song. He should be locked up or put in prison for being some kind of perv. So if this is your wedding song, I'm so sorry if you're hearing this and you're like, well, fuck. Take us a different direction, Ed. Tell me something fun.
We all love boy bands, right? Or is that just me?
No, no, we all love boy bands.
Right, because they're bops. Like, everything they do is fun and they're great for karaoke. And you know what song I love? It's Gonna Be Me by NSYNC.
Okay, why do you love It's Gonna Be Me?
Oh, just because it's NSYNC and they're just so much fun. But if you really listen to the lyrics, it's like you're in a nice guys / incel forum on Reddit.
A nice guy's incel form on Reddit. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, you need to break this down.
Well, you clearly don't know, and maybe other people don't, but like, there's this thing in predominantly straight dating spaces where like guys think that like, I am nice to you. I have paid you with nice. So now you must pay me with attention and love and sex. And they're like, always like, oh, the girls dig jerks. And then they dive right into the most misogynist bullshit because they got their fifis hurt because somebody didn't like them back. But if you listen to the lyrics of this song, every little thing I do never seems enough for you. You don't want to lose it again, but I'm not like them. Baby, when you finally get to love somebody, guess what? It's gonna be me.
Oh, wow.
And there's some weird consent things in it, too. It's like, you've got no choice, babe. Like, you know, you got a choice, girl. Like, get away from Justin Timberlake right now. Get away from his ramen hair era.
Give him like 10 years and then come back to JT. And then you can love up on JT all you want because JT came back hard. Starting with the work with the Lonely Island. That's where I'm always going to tie it back to for Justin Timberlake for me.
Actually, for me, it's Timbaland. You put Justin Timberlake and Timbaland together.
Oh, no, those were bops too. Senorita? Come on, son.
Do you have a fun one for us?
I have an interesting one. I guess there's songs of karaoke and just that we listen to that are very popular songs that you don't attempt to think about, or you don't think about sometimes. One that caught me off guard was Blackbird by the Beatles. It's a beautiful song. I've heard it at karaoke a number of times because it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous song to sing. And like, if you take it at face value, you know, it's a song about a bird. It's not. The Beatles wrote this song about an African-American girl growing up in the Deep South in the 60s and dealing with the racial violence and Jim Crow laws. Keeping that in mind, that they were thinking about what was going on in the era in the South when they were recording, and they wrote this song from the perspective of, about a young African-American girl in the South, like, listen to it again. Do me a favor, like, pause us. I give you permission to switch over to Blackbird and just listen to it again with that perspective. And you want something that's really going to shift your opinion about a song or really bring a deeper meaning to a song? I was really just caught off guard with that, which I just think is cool. But that's one of those ones that, while It's Gonna Be Me may be working its way off of my karaoke radar forever, I want to hear more Blackbird. Not me singing it because it's the Beatles, but I would love to hear more people that can sing well sing Blackbird.
There is a Beatles song I would have wanted to hear you sing before.
What's that?
Oh, Darling.
Okay.
There's a clear blues influence to it.
Mm-hmm.
But man, is that a song of abuse.
Oh, okay.
It is not a romantic song. It goes back to that, like, please don't make this your wedding song. Because if somebody starts off by saying, I'll never do you no harm, you have to start thinking, this person might do me some harm.
Yeah.
And if you leave me, I'll never make it alone. Believe me when I beg you, don't ever leave me alone. Like, okay, we're getting there. And, you know, when you told me you didn't need me anymore, well, you know, I nearly broke down and died.
Yikes.
Some person says that to you, man. Just bounce, skedaddle, be out. Gone.
Yeah. Yes. No more. Okay, Ed, I said we each do one more. Does that sound fair?
Sounds good.
We'll kind of put a cap on it. You know, like, screw, you get it. I'm going to read a direct quote from the musical artist here describing their song. Okay, we're going to work backwards now. We're going to flip the script. This is my last one. I have a quote where I'm going to omit the name of this artist and omit the song, but I need you to tell me what song this is. The first song that pops in your head. You're probably not going to get it right, but I want to hear what pops in your head. You got it, Ed?
Yep.
All okay. Right. This song represents a frame of time or the futility of life. Things are going to be gone. All that's going to be left are the people that you've nurtured and have really built to be your backbone and your support system. What song pops in your head?
I know it can't be a Beatles song because we just did a whole bunch of Beatles. I was like, with a little help from my friends.
No, it is. It is not. What if I give you this evidence in the lyrics to support that theory? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You have so many relationships in this life. Only one or two will last. You go through all the pain and strife. Then you turn your back and they're gone so fast.
Oh, I know this, but like without the tune, I'm not placing it.
So this song about the futility of life and the frame of time. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Hanson's umbop is actually about the fleeting nature of friendship, material possessions, and even life itself.
I am blown away by that. I am just so blown away.
Isn't it kind of like a Debbie Downer in a way, though? Like, you thought it was just this, like, catchy pop song that didn't really mean anything. You could just kind of, like, be happy about it. And now somebody's like, hey, can you sing umbop? I'm like, no, that'll make me sad. Why do you make it sad? And then I had to explain to him about the futility of life and the entire nine yards. That blew my mind. I'm like, come on now, this is umbop.
This just makes me think of French existentialism from the early 1900s. And it's Hanson. And that is just...
They're old souls.
Messing with my head. Yeah.
They're old souls. Yeah. Okay, Ed, hit me with the last one. Let's go.
So last episode, when we talked to Jay McInnes, he mentioned being a very big fan of the Lumineers. And I love the Lumineers. I think they make great music. And I did not realize until I dove into the lyrics of Ho Hey that it's going back to that James Blunt thing. He's singing a song to somebody who he either dated and it ended, or someone who was just with someone else. But I just never put it together in my head that I don't think you're right for him. Think of what might have been if we took a bus to Chinatown. I'd be standing on Canal and Bowery. And then it gets possessive with the I belong to you, you belong with me, you're my sweetheart thing. Wow, this song is not as warm and fuzzy as I thought.
No, not really. Not as warm as fuzzy there. Lumineers are great, though. I support
that. Oh, yeah, they're such a good band.
It's so good. So here's what I learned today, Ed, just to kind of summarize so we can move on and get to the really good shit of this episode, which is our interview with Courtney E. Smith. I learned that I should not give a shit about what the songs actually mean when I'm singing karaoke and just fucking enjoy it. Because yeah. Umbop is now ruined for me. But have Blackbird's enhanced.
Have you done Umbop before?
Oh, I had to have. I'm 99.99999% positive that somebody asked me to sing Umbop, and of course I did it.
I know I'm going to have to do it at some point if I haven't already. I don't recall if I did or not. I kind of want to do Total Eclipse of the Heart tonight now.
Turn around bright eyes. And on that, let's just cue the guitar and move on to the next thing.
And now it's time for a promo.
Hey, Emily.
Hey, Stephanie.
You want to do a podcast?
Absolutely.
Welcome to Cycle Chats, a podcast to help millennial women break the cycle, empower each other through education, and inspire each other to start changing the narrative of what it means to be a woman. So let's break the cycle together. You can find us on www.cyclechats.com.
And we hope you sync up with us next time.
A while back, we saw a tweet that rightly called out music podcasts in general, that they're often a bunch of guys talking about music made by some other guys. The person who sent that tweet has a long music pedigree, starting with her time at MTV and continuing through to her writing about music for various publications and her book, Record Collecting for Girls. And since she's here, that means that karaoke has played a part in her own music journey. Courtney E. Smith, welcome to The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. And so far, after that tweet, you're the only podcast of all men who've asked me to come be on their podcast.
Oh, well, that's something. We're flattered that we're happy to have you here, honestly. We love trying to find different voices other than ours, for sure.
I mean, I think it's important. And women, it's not that we all experience music differently. It's just that maybe we prioritize different things or like different things or have a wildly different life experience. So I'm here to talk about it.
Great. We're ready to dive in and hear all about those life experiences. Let's start with the obvious one for this podcast. We firmly believe that karaoke can be something that you fall into. And we love to ask everybody, what's your karaoke origin story?
Okay, so I had these friends in my 20s in New York City who would drag everybody out to karaoke every now and then. And it was this group of girls that had moved to New York from Seattle, which I'm not, I'm from Texas, but I was like the interloper in the friend group. And they got me going to this place by NYU that was an underground karaoke bar, not underground in that it was hidden underground, that it was literally underground and just pitch black and cave-like in there. And they would all get up and sing these songs and perform and like fully pantomime and really get into it. And it was a lot of fun. It looked like they were having so much fun. So I finally decided to give it a try. And it turns out the acoustics in that room were amazing. And I was like, oh my God, am I a great singer? I'm not, but the room is really warm, really good. And that's what got me into it. Just this whole group of girls that were so, so into the performance of karaoke.
That's awesome. And I love how you say the room can make it change how you sound and the environment and all that. And that's so true. And you've also got a strong opinion on what can make a karaoke night more fun and a better experience for the audience. What is it and why do you feel that way?
Well, this opinion is also based in those experiences. So the other people that would show up to this karaoke bar were frequently NYU students singing Broadway songs. Annoying. The
yes.
Worst.
Wait, what? Oh, no.
No. They're such good singers, like technically very proficient, obviously majoring in theater or what have you. And they would get up there and just like sing their little hearts out. And it was awful for everyone because it was good. Like it's so much more fun if you're not perfect, if you're kind of bad, quite frankly, but you're into it. And when those kids would come in and dominate, I was just like, oh, this is the worst kind of karaoke. This is like showing off, showboating. That's not fun.
That's not fun. Yes. Okay. I thought we were attacking Broadway karaoke and we were going to change the entire topic here. But no, I agree with you. Showboating's not fun. But why do you think kind of like bad singers make things better?
Because the whole room roots for them, especially if they like obviously are feeling shy or they're feeling self-conscious at all. Everybody wants to get involved and hoot and holler and clap and like sing along with them and give them that support so that it boosts their confidence. That's what I've always found. Or people that are like really interesting performers and, you know, really going along with the song, but not singing it well, or just singing it in a very, very different style, like a totally different interpretation. Those are always the most interesting because you don't know what they're going to do. Like there's no telling where this goes. And that is great also. That is super fun. It keeps me on the edge of my seat and it keeps me really like engaged and on the side of the performer. Like I'm being performed with and not at.
I love that. Don't you love that?
That makes so much sense. Yes. It's a communal experience when it happens that way. Now, I have a question about your background in music and in the industry of it. When you were at MTV working in music programming, you were one of the folks determining what music gets to the people. How is something like that decided? And does a similar thought process go into how you pick your own karaoke songs?
Such a good question. So I was there from 2000 to 2008, and the metrics we looked at were different than they would be now just because technology has changed and where people get music from has changed. Like what's influential is different. So we would look at a whole suite of data. We would look at radio airplay and sales and syncs and licenses. What was on the OC every week was important. What was in the Pineapple Express movie trailer was important. You know, the way that people are discovering music then was hugely based in TV and movies, especially because there were so many teenage soap operas and we wanted those kids to watch MTV as well. But a big part of it was also taste. It was about what you liked. And I used to call the music meetings MTV Debate Club because people would come in with the agenda that a record label gave them and the stuff that they had to present. But there would also be stuff you just cared about, stuff that you just wanted to see succeed and you thought was cool. And those were the most fun conversations to me when I was like really going at it for some underdog band and being like, we should be paying attention to this. This whole scene is really important. This band encapsulates it. This is the band that will cross over into the mainstream and be accessible to everybody. So let's give it a try and see what happens.
That's insanely interesting. And you struck a chord with me clearly because I fist pumped a little bit when you said the OC and what was on the OC because I have vivid memories. That was, well, it was like at the time, it was like the biggest thing in the entire world. I don't think there's ever been, I can't remember a TV show specifically for album sales that sold as much as like volume one and volume two specifically of the music for the OC. It was wild.
I programmed a show called Subterranean on MTV2 that was the indie rock show. And there was a point where I had to tell the production team that were filming the VJ segments and the interviews with bands, stop introducing videos as this was a song on the OC soundtrack. Everything was. You got it, like moratorium on that. Just quit. Find something else to say.
Does that same kind of thought process go into how you pick your own karaoke songs? Like what's going to go over?
Yes, 100%. I like stuff that's a little bit older. Like I like a 20-year buffer usually. There are a few exceptions to that, but I don't like to do super new stuff. Familiarity is important in a room full of people. And familiarity is also just a limitation of the catalog because a lot of places don't have your underground greatest hits of Bright Eyes. They don't even have Kate Bush, quite frankly. They might now that the Stranger Things phenomenon has happened. But you have to go with what people know. And if you're going to make a left of the dial decision, it has to be strategic. I think there has to be a reason. It should be relating to something that's happening at the time, or it should be something relating to your personality and a way that you can perform the song that no one else can, or the group of people that you're with. Maybe this means something, but I don't think you can just pull something obscure out of your pocket at karaoke. It's not so fun.
I wish you could pull more Bright Eyes out of your pocket, though. There is a complete lack of Bright Eyes. I've been waiting to do Bowl of Oranges for years and just nobody has it.
Well, I mean, have you been following what's going on with Connor as he tours right now at all?
I haven't been following. No, please tell me what's happened. Oh, no. Is this
Adam
bad?
He walked off stage and they turned it into karaoke.
Yeah. Well, he's walked off stage a couple of dates, which is not out of character for him. I mean, He did this back in the day as well. But yeah, there was a show in Houston recently. He walked off stage after two songs and people from the audience came up on stage and started karaokeing his songs. And then it became apparent he wasn't coming back and the venue was like, I'm sorry, go home.
Ooh, yeah, not great. Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Maybe I'll keep it as the only time I've ever seen Connor Oberst live. He was touring with the Monsters of Folk. And I saw him on Halloween night in Louisville, Kentucky. They played for 2.5 hours, came back in an encore for 20 minutes, dressed as Kiss. It went right into Rock and Roll All Night. So until you've seen that particular group dressed as Kiss, yeah, it was quite the experience. But to follow up on something that you said about karaoke choices, what do you think someone's karaoke choices says about them? Can you kind of read a person based on what choices they're bringing to a karaoke night?
I think that people often pick songs based on their mood. Like I sometimes will do Fleetwood Mac's Silver Springs, but I can only do that when I can get to like that angry place near the end of the song where I'm going to go for it and yell and like be mad about a breakup. If I can't channel that, I can't do that song because I'm not going to be able to sell it properly. And I've had friends that do cute stuff like Linda Ronstadt, Different Drum. And I think you have to be in the right kind of place to pull some songs off. Sometimes you can just tell someone's trying to disrupt the room. And my favorite karaoke moment was out with a girlfriend who put on Aqualung and then just deadpanned the song into oblivion. The whole room, it destroyed the room, not in a good way. Like it killed the whole karaoke night. And I was like, wow, you just took out your anger on a whole group of people in a terrible way. All right, cool.
Going along with that, something that you said when we were setting this up, what did a karaoke song choice say about a date where you probably should have ended things right there?
Oh my God, I have such a story about that. So there's this guy that I went on a first date with, and I wished I'd never gone out with him again, but we dated for 6 months. He surprised, like, ambush me with karaoke at the end of the date. He was like, oh, there's a place just right across the street that I go to sometimes. Do you want to go there and get a drink? And it was Karaoke Lounge, and it was one I'd been to before, and I knew that my voice didn't sound good in that room. So I'm like, yeah, we can have a drink, but I knew he was going to sing, because you don't suggest that on a date unless you're going to do it. And then he didn't preface this with anything, but apparently he has a whole script that he does, like a prescribed set that he performs, and he did a Queen song, and it really got the room going, and everybody got behind him, and it was a good performance, but I was just like, I really should have seen that this was a precursor to what the rest of the relationship would be like, very scripted and very kind of, I don't know, vague, just to highlight his positive points. And I remember sitting there at the table, and it was a nice high top, and I was just watching him perform, seeing the room be charmed by him and not feeling charmed at all. And I don't know why I gave him a second chance, let alone dated him for months. Gosh, that was a bad decision.
I feel like we've all been, maybe not in those exact shoes, but something very similar. At least I can empathize with that. But what I can't empathize with, what I absolutely can't empathize with, is Ed surprising you with something. He said, when this is being set up, you said you had a great experience singing Picture by Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow. I don't think this is possible. I need you to convince me, Courtney. Convince me how this is possible, please.
Okay, let me set the scene. One night, it's just me and my friend Laura, who might have been my roommate at the time. And we go to that underground bar by NYU that I talked about. It's not the whole group of girls. It's just us. We're having a quiet night. We're just going to do a little karaoke, maybe. Or if it's not cool, we're going to leave and go to one of the cooler bars down the street. But it was okay. And we're singing. And there's this really handsome guy there who was only doing duets with other people. And it was obvious that he was picking who he thought were the best singers in the room to do a song with him. And he was picking songs that were really tailored to their voices based on something else they'd done. And I thought that was super interesting. And I don't think I'm a good singer. There weren't a ton of people there anyway, but I didn't have any expectation he would come ask me to do a duet. And he did. And he was like, I think we should do Picture by Sheryl Crow and Kid Rock. And I was like, I'm glad they put the words on the screen because I'm not even sure I know the words to that song. And wow, has that duet not stood the test of time. Not that Kid Rock was ever a beacon of like great men in society, but it's gotten worse. But it was the first time I'd ever tried to sing Sheryl Crow. And it turns out that that is very much in my range and I could do it. And that lovely gentleman made it clear to me. And I now do a bunch of Sheryl Crow songs. But it was a nice experience. And it felt good to be asked and have somebody have that, you know, faith that your voice was going to work with theirs. It was lovely.
That is a lovely story. Yeah, okay. That's the one lovely story. That's it right there. You got it.
Yeah.
That, I love that.
But yeah, we can let that picture story slide. One of the things I love is that you're passionate about gender equality in music. Where do you see those gaps in general?
Well, one of the big ones that I've written about a lot is in the major awards, be it the Rock Hall of Fame, be it the Grammys, the CMA Awards, any of that stuff. And a lot of people think that's not important or these things are silly to consider. But I would argue that it's very important because when we look back, if I want to know what the biggest album in 1961 is, I'll look at who won a bunch of Grammy Awards that year. So when we look back on what the historical context of what pop music is, what people were listening to, what was important, all of these big Hall of Fames and awards mean a lot. And gender equality in all of them is a huge problem. It's a bigger problem in some than in others. And in some, it's reflective of gender inequality in radio airplay and just this pervasive sense that women aren't as serious as artists as men. So I'm very, very outspoken about leveling that playing field. Let's take the women of the 60s and 70s and 80s a lot more seriously if we're the Rock Hall. Let's not just induct the males of grunge immediately on their first year that they're eligible. Let's make sure we're inducting the women too, because they're really important. Let's make sure that women are not only winning Best New Artist at the Grammys, let's make sure that they're winning a whole lot of different things. The other thing that I think is really important is women in the studio and women in executive roles. There's a pervasive problem where less than 2% effectively of women produce the most popular albums for the last 6 years. These numbers are all put together in research by USC's Annenberg Institute. And it's really ridiculous how much women are not seen as capable of producing music. Women aren't even asked, especially by other women. And most of the women who have been producers and are among those numbers are self-producing their own work. So I've been scratching my head for a long time, as have a lot of people, about why that is, why we don't see women as fitting for that role. And the other role that's important is engineering. Women just practically don't exist in that job at all, which is ridiculous. There's plenty of women that are interested in the technical aspects of music. The other thing is women who are executives and women in A&R. These are the people that decide not only who gets signed to record deals, but how much money they get, how they get marketed, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of female artists have taken over and have a much stronger stance about talking back to record labels, pushing back on the advice they're given, pushing back on what the single's going to be, what's going to be on the album, what they're going to look like. But there's still a lot of stories of young women artists sitting in a boardroom and being told by middle-aged men what they should look like and what the market needs. And that is offensive, ridiculous, stupid. So those are the things that I think if we could even it out in those areas, music would be a lot different.
Yeah, we should even it out in those areas. I didn't realize it was that severe, honestly. As you started making the points and talking about it, like I didn't realize, I figured I could make an educated guess that there was going to be a gap because of, you know, just like my knowledge in the outskirts, but I didn't realize it was less than 2%. That's disgusting.
It's statistically non-existent, which is
disgusting.
Why?
What issues do you see with gender equality in karaoke?
Well, I think the main thing is that women are given a lot of messages in society to focus on how they look and be attractive and think about themselves through the lens of the male gaze. And I know for a lot of us, that was the case for me for a long time. It makes it harder to get up on stage and perform in front of people. If you're thinking about if they find you attractive, are they judging you? How do you look? And it sucks the fun out of it, first of all. And second of all, it really saps your confidence. It can. So it's not karaoke per se that's the root of that problem. It's focusing on the male gaze and lots of beauty myths and pink taxing and blah, blah, blah nonsense that women get fed. So I'd say the solution is men at karaoke never comment on a woman's appearance, even if it's a compliment, just don't.
You were hopping into my question because we're going to transition to something a little different, but I just want to put a little bit of a cap on this project. Because I was going to ask, you know, as a middle-aged white man, I try to understand my privilege, but I'm continuing to understand my privilege and the societal problems that are just inherently tied that I grew up and didn't know existed. So I'm continuing to try to educate myself. And I was going to ask, how can I be an ally? Do you have any advice for somebody like me who just wants to be an ally? How can I be an ally?
Yeah, find something to compliment. If somebody did a great job singing a song, tell them that. Don't compliment anything. I mean, don't even mention anything about the way they look. If you find them attractive, anything in that arena, it's not their problem. That's nice that you think that, but you can keep that thought to yourself.
That's great advice. We'd be remiss if we did not mention the amazing podcast you did a while back, Songs in the Key of Death. What made you want to do a podcast on murder ballads? And for those who might not be familiar, what is a murder ballad exactly?
Well, murder ballads are songs that were written about a crime. Sometimes it's a real crime and sometimes it's not. They have existed for hundreds of years. They date back to 1600s in England and Ireland and Scotland, where they were very popular. But there are murder ballads in a lot of other cultures too. They come from Asian culture. They come from Latin America. Right now, they're extremely popular in Mexican music, which I find super interesting. But a lot of the ones we know in America and that we think about today are the ones that come from that British tradition. And they would have come over with, you know, the refugees, the immigrants who settled this country. What made me think about doing it? Well, I'd written a series about murder ballads when I was at CBS, and it was just a week-long thing where I explored a few different ballads, a few different topics, and the thing that kicked that off was that Carrie Underwood's Two Black Cadillacs and the band Perry's Better Dig 2 had both just come out. So I was kind of poking at, is there something happening with murder ballads and country music right now? This would have been 2014, maybe. And so I just, you know, wrote about Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit, which is a murder ballad about lynchings. I wrote about Nick Cave's murder ballad albums. I wrote about hip hop and murder ballads and how a lot of the hardcore rap from the late 80s and the 90s was based in truth. And then the way that we don't actually give people of color the same sort of license that we give songwriters who are white to think they could just be making things up or being more grandiose than the real thing in order to tell a story. And a friend of mine who started a podcast company remembered that series. And she was texting me whenever Dolly Parton's America came out because of that first episode, whenever the host talks about Dolly writing a murder ballad and does like a record scratch, what's a murder ballad? And she was just like, that was so embarrassing. Like, who doesn't know what this is? Do people really not know what these are? And I tried to send them your articles, but I guess they'd been taken down, which is true. They no longer exist on the internet except on my website because that project got scrapped and they just killed all of our content, which is so great. Love to feel important as a writer. But she was getting together a podcast company that did only podcasts about music, and she and her partner were like, would you maybe want to do a limited podcast series on murder ballads? And I don't know what that looks like, but we could talk about what that would be. So we did. We brainstormed it, and it turned into an idea where we picked out a handful of songs, told the stories about the true crimes that inspired those murder ballads, and then talked about some of the most famous people who've performed the songs and what history gets wrong and right about them, since there's this long lapse of time between when the crime happens, when the ballad's written, and the number of people that perform it over the years. It could be an entire century.
This is a natural question. And it's a completely unfair question. Okay. I'm just prefacing it. It's an unfair question, but I'm going to ask anyway, because I'm curious. What's your favorite murder ballad?
Oh, wow. I mean, that's a really unfair question. How can I pick one? Like, I love Stagger Lee a lot because the history of it is just so interesting. And when I got into it, I found out that everything I thought I knew about that song wasn't quite the whole story. There's so much story to it. And then the number of different interpretations of it that have happened through the years are amazing. There are songs that sound nothing like each other that are all Stagger Lee songs. So, I mean, when tracing through the different branches of how this version and this version of the song and this version came to be and who sang them and where it shoots off and what part of the country it traveled through, that stuff is so nerdy, but I really, really love it. So I like that one a lot. I really like The Wreck of the Old 97 for the same reason, because there's a lot of history and information there and a lot of different people that performed it. It's hard to like some of them, though, because as many people have pointed out, an awful lot of them are about women getting killed, and it can be really like tough to listen to.
Yeah, very much. That's why I like things like, obviously not a actual murder ballad in the sense of it being historical, but things like Goodbye Earl, like, are really great at flipping that script. And Speaking of flipping the script, we'd like to flip the script with you now, because we would love to play our quick fire game with you, because you've been so much fun and so knowledgeable, and I know your answers to these questions are going to kill. So are you ready to play Hit Me With Your Best Shot with us?
Hit me with your best shot.
We're going to ask you 5 quick fire questions. Adam loves the air quotes.
Yeah. I do love the air quotes. Quick fire.
Whatever thought comes to mind is what you roll with. You don't have to explain, quantify, or qualify. Whatever answer you want to give is the right answer for you. Once that's done, it's only fair that you get to fire away and ask Adam and I any question you want, karaoke related or otherwise, and we solemnly swear to give an honest answer. So, Courtney E. Smith, are you ready to play our game?
I'm ready.
All right, Adam, kick us off.
Question number 1. and you cannot give an answer you've already given in this interview, okay? What is the best thing you have seen at karaoke?
Gosh. Wow, that's really, really hard. The best thing I've seen at karaoke was actually really recently, and it was at a restaurant / performance venue in a small town in Texas. And these bands were coming on and doing live music karaoke to really obscure Texas songs. There was no songbook because, you know, live band karaoke. And one of them, I haven't looked up who did this song, but it was a song about having sex, but the euphemism was making guacamole all night. And it was so funny. It was just so unexpected. I was there with my family, my extended family, and they're just like going for it. And we're all snort laughing, just rolling around because it was hilarious.
I am going to have to look up that song. Conversely, what's the worst thing you've seen at karaoke?
The worst thing I've seen at karaoke is every NYU student that sang anything, especially from Into the Woods.
That's completely fair. Yep. I can get behind that one at least. What is the one song you would love to sing or perform at karaoke, but you've just never been able to find, or you haven't been able to find a good instrumental of?
You know what? It's Kate Bush running up that hill or cloud busting. And they never have Kate Bush in the book. And I'm really hoping that everything that's going on right now with Stranger Things and boosting her to the top of the charts will make it so popular that it will now be in books everywhere.
Now, we've got to take it down a notch and do the question that Frank Turner rewrote for us. And it's so much better his way. Imagine that somebody kidnapped your family and your loved ones. And the only way to release them was to wow the kidnappers with a karaoke performance. What song do you choose?
It would obviously be Lyle Lovett's That's Right, You're Not From Texas. And if that doesn't do the trick, then I think they're just going to die. I'm sorry.
I have no doubt that it would do the trick. My favorite question to ask, and I'm very interested in your opinion on this. If you could magically strike one song from every karaoke playlist forever, which song would you choose?
Anything over 5 minutes long.
But let's narrow it down to one.
Narrow it down. Let's go.
Actually, can I strike Metallica's Enter Sandman? Because nobody's ever done that song without like being way too sincere and into it and frankly, a little bit frightening. So unless you're going to do like the Muppets as a voice while you do that, then it's a no.
Ed and I both, did you see the light bulbs that both appeared over Ed and I's heads as you said that, doing Enter Sandman in a Muppet voice? Coming to your karaoke stage sometime soon. But I love that. And that was completely correct. And I loved all those answers so much. Like I really did. They were insightful and everything you want answers to be. But now it's fair. Okay, you're off the hot seat. The seat is no longer hot. We're switching that heat over this way and you get a chance to fire away. So go ahead, give us whatever questions on your mind and Ed and I saw we swear we'll answer honestly.
First of all, I'm no Frank Turner. So what a great interview that guy is. So great to talk to you. Have either of you ever done a karaoke song by someone not of your gender?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'd like more details, please.
Yeah, the way that I learned how to adjust things to my range was by singing songs that were traditionally sung by women because, like, in my head, drunk me at the bar can sing Al Green. Drunk me cannot sing Al Green. I cannot hit those notes.
Mm-hmm.
But can drunk me sing Nora Jones or Diana Krall or The Pretenders? Drunk me can. So that's how I taught myself to learn how to adjust into songs. If I had to pick a go-to, I'm just going to say Son of a Preacher Man by Dusty Springfield because that song is just so much fun to sing.
I'm so impressed that that's like the range in that is hard. That's a difficult one.
I have a similar story. The way I learned to adjust my voice for karaoke songs is actually seeing Carrie Underwood's Before He Cheats.
Oh, like, that's a fun one.
It's so much fun to sing, and something that I found like taking on that song, my voice found a very natural way to settle into it. And I started hearing it. I'm like, okay, I can change the key and it can still sound great. So now I have a couple, like I will sing Adele at karaoke.
Wow. Okay.
I like singing Lady Gaga at karaoke, specifically A Million Reasons. Oh, yeah.
Do you break hearts with that or what? Wow, those are all tough songs. You have a powerful voice then.
Adam's got pipes. My Lady Gaga song is You and I.
Oh, I like that. I don't think I've ever done Gaga. Interesting.
My number one gender bend that I've done at karaoke was I busted it out in Indiana, Pennsylvania one day, and I sang Dreamgirls. And I'm telling you, I'm not leaving. And I lowered the key. Like, I dropped that thing way down to, I turned it almost into like a very bluesy, like kind of growl, and brought it way down. And it made all those notes accessible. Cause I don't know what it is. I can't find it. Like with male voices, it's very difficult sometimes to adjust the key and find like where it sounds comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With like, there's something about like female voices that are just so beautiful and natural to settle into. And like, and I absolutely adore having that experience and traveling. Now, I'm not saying that I could do it. I ended up singing Carrie Underwood's Jesus Take the Wheel one day.
Okay.
And that one did not go so well. That's a Carrie Underwood's got pipes.
Like, yeah. And when I leave here tonight, I'm contemplating doing a duet by myself, as Adam and I often do. We always say that we're the only people egotistical enough to do duets by ourselves. But Are You That Somebody by Aaliyah and Timbaland might be on my list tonight.
What's your biggest bomb at karaoke?
Mine, we've told it on the podcast so many times, but I never mind telling it again. When Adam first got me into karaoke nearly 15 years ago, I put in Mr. Jones, a song that I grew up with. Uh-huh. I grew up loving Counting Crows. The scan was off. I didn't know how to sing karaoke, and I was so bad that that tall bastard booed me from the top of the bar. And I couldn't be mad at him because he was right. That was a boo-worthy performance.
Oh, wow.
So bad. That is my biggest crash and burn of all time. What about you, Adam?
I'm trying to think of other examples because it happens literally all the time. So like with what we're trying to do, I'm going to use something different because musical theater songs, since we've broached that subject, the right ones can be all right on a karaoke night. They can't. If I Were a Rich Man plays really well, no matter where you're at.
Okay, I'll accept that. Sure.
That one plays okay. Well. It depends on the crowd you're with. It really does.
Yeah.
If you don't do well with them, though, if you're going to pick one, you don't do well with it or at least have fun with it, then it's going to bomb the entire night.
So yeah.
Picking something from, let's say, Phantom of the Opera and not being able to sing the Phantom well
will kill
a karaoke night. Yeah. And I've had that happen before. I learned my lesson about Phantom of the Opera. I tried singing the music of the night once and it's just, I was off that night, couldn't find anything. It destroyed the entire, like it killed a mood. Like, cause it's long, it's very difficult to sing, it's somber, like, and I just didn't do well with it. So we'll give a different example than my normal ones about the Beatles and me singing the Beatles, which just never again at this point.
I think the Beatles could be left alone at karaoke by most people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I tell you my biggest bomb? Because it was really upsetting to me. I love Elvis Costello so much. He's my favorite artist. And I love his smart ass lyrics. And I tried to do Watching the Detectives. And like, wow, can I not do the, I couldn't ever get the thing into the right key. And maybe it was the particular song that I was doing, but I've tried to like workshop it since then. And I can't do any of his songs in karaoke at all. I don't think it's that hard is the thing. It's just like, there's a gap in there that I fall right into of notes I can't hit that I cannot naturally get into.
Yeah, it's a trap a lot of times. There's a thing I've noticed about music in general. You can be fine for 97 to 98% of the song, but there's always that last note for some reason. Everybody feels like they need to show off or go on some like wild run that's either computer generated or no human can actually do except for that one person. Like, I pity anybody who tries to sing Christina Aguilera at karaoke. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody do well with her because like those runs, like
they're impossible.
They are.
But you know, what's really interesting is people can do Mariah Carey pretty well because it's like with Mariah, you can almost take liberties with the song. And with Christina, you kind of can't.
No, you can't do it with Christina.
Speaking of workshopping songs, I'm assuming we all do that and like practice them at home for ourselves. What are you workshopping now?
So my thing is I don't practice. My favorite.
You do, Ed. You boo. Sing in the car.
No,
boo.
No. My favorite thing at karaoke is to sing a song that I've never sang before and sometimes a song I've never heard before.
Oh, that's bold.
I constantly need to chase that thrill. So that's how I do it. Am I workshopping anything? Yes. I have an upcoming appearance on another podcast where the theme is doo-wop and golden oldies. So I spent all of last night taking a bubble bath, drinking bourbon, and singing old doo-wop songs.
Nice. Well, have you landed on one?
No, because I get the boring part in every doo-wop song. Like, Adam and I do not get the lead vocals in doo-wop. We're the guy in the background going, boom, boom. And that's it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Doesn't sound thrilling.
There are a couple on what I'll call my karaoke hit list that I feel like I keep coming back to, that I'm just waiting for the day that I can actually find a copy of it, or just for me to like actually get to the point where I feel like I would not bomb a karaoke with it. Like, one of them is The Ballad of Curtis Lowe by Lynyrd Skynyrd. I love to do that at karaoke, and I just am finessing it. Make Someone Happy by Sammy Davis Jr. is another one I've been workshopping because I really love Sammy Davis Jr.'s voice. And another one, I will sing along to it all day. I will listen, but I could never, I love this singer so much, I could never bring myself to ever do any of his songs with karaoke, because I love Sam Cooke. I love Sam Cooke with all my heart. And I could never, ever do his songs with karaoke because I would hate myself afterwards.
I think I'm workshopping Strut by Sheila E., but it's less a workshop on the song and more a workshop on the like movements, because I don't think you can just stand there or even like wing it. So
you need the choreography. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm doing in my bedroom nights, if anybody's curious. Okay. One last karaoke song. Are there any tells when you walk into a room that let you know this isn't the right room for you?
Here's Ed and I's favorite story about like just how well we read a room and how well we've started to understand karaoke nights. We had a regular place in our days when we were going to karaoke 5 to 6 nights a week. We had a Wednesday night spot that was we lived in a pretty rural area in Western Pennsylvania as it was. But we had a Wednesday night spot. We knew the karaoke DJ very well. We knew the bartenders. We liked the bartenders. It was like normally a mix of locals, and they bus in college kids every now and then because there were two colleges that were close by. But we at our peak when we were going to this place, we used to have 10 to 12 of us that would all go as a group, and we just enjoy the entire night. So we knew everyone very well. We always had a good time out there. And one night we showed up, we walked in, and we kind of like got one drink, and we were like, something's not right tonight. Like, something feels off in here tonight. Like, the entire vibe in the entire room felt off.
You could literally smell the testosterone in the air that night.
Oh, dear.
It was one of those nights that you could feel it. I'm going to tell you what happened. We decided to leave. Okay. We're like, no, this isn't it tonight. Let's go find something else to do. I'm going to let Ed tell you what we ended up doing, but we left this bar because we wanted to go find more karaoke. So we found more karaoke. We left and someone got stabbed that night in that bar.
Yep. What?
Yep. So we left that bar to go do karaoke in a very terrible strip club that no longer exists because we knew they had karaoke that night. Honestly, that night was just so off on both sides that maybe we should have stayed and got stabbed. It could have gone either way.
It was an interesting night. I don't like strip clubs as it is. I'm sex worker positive, but there's also a lot of, it's a tough area to like look at too. So I don't feel comfortable with it. I empower you to do whatever, like, you know, very positive, like support. But for me individually, it's tough for me. So like, I'm not a gigantic fan of going to strip clubs as it is. And I will never forget the DJ playing Cotton Eye Joe in a stripper dancing to Cotton Eye Joe at this bar. And wasn't the karaoke DJ dressed as like Elvis or something too, Ed?
He was not dressed as Elvis because I've seen that guy around. That's just what he looks like.
Great.
Good.
He's got the pompadour. He's got the sideburns. That's just a personal style choice.
It was, but it was a night we'll tell stories about forever too.
I mean, my favorite part of that story is you did not pack it in and go home. You went to a second venue. It was happening.
Well, because it was a karaoke night.
We just needed to find karaoke.
For me in reading a room, I'm typically, again, very good at it. I've been in sales for 20 years. I can kind of suss out a vibe. My thing is less about reading the room and finding the surprise. So there's a bar in Cape Coral, Florida that I fucking love. It's called Backstreets. It's like if a biker bar, a dive bar, an upscale bar, and a vacation bar had a baby. And you never know what you're going to get at their karaoke. And the one time I sat there, this old guy wearing a golf-branded polo shirt, not just a polo shirt, but it was like a Titleist polo shirt. And he was like 70 years old. he gets up on stage and I'm like, all right, we're going to get some Sinatra. We're going to get some Bobby Darin. And this man cold rocked Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe. And I'm just like, this is the best night ever.
That sounds amazing. I want to go there. That sounds rad.
We all want to go there, Ed. That's universal. I think anybody that's heard this podcast now wants to go to this place. Courtney, love this conversation. I really have. It's been entertaining. It's been informative. You've told some great stories. It's just been a blast. So what we like to do at this point is turn the floor over. The podcast is now yours. Talk about whatever you want to talk about. Doesn't matter what you talk about, but if you want the floor, it's yours for as long as you want it. So take it away.
Well, that's lovely. Thank you. So I've been working on another podcast, and it's about the history of indie rock in the early 2000s. Been interviewing all the folks from that scene, the monsters of folks, if you know what I'm saying, wink, wink. It's been really fun to revisit it. Those are like my halcyon years of being young, dumb, and in the streets and working at MTV, somehow telling people what music to listen to. I don't know why. It's been so great, and I'm really excited for it to come out. We're still in the process of producing it and doing the interviews, but it's been so fascinating because I've been getting into pulling together all these strings of the different reasons why indie rock blew up in the way that it did in that decade. And it's this fascinating matrix of once-in-a-lifetime events that this emergence of technology, this interest from music supervisors, this group of people who were really talented making incredible music that just all kind of happened at the same time. And I've also had a lot of fun talking to people 20 years later who I knew then, because not only are they more forthcoming now because it's in the past and it's easier to be honest once you're successful or not so successful and really evaluate what happened, but it's also interesting to hear them struggle with why they did or didn't want success back then and what freaked them out about it or if it was okay. I've had some conversations that have really depressed me. I've had some conversations that were really funny and really engaging. And I've had people say some really, really honest stuff. So I'm super excited for it to be out in the universe and for everyone else to be able to enjoy it.
I am sure I'm going to binge that one as hard as I binged Songs in the Key of Death. Courtney E. Smith, thank you so much for joining us. And we hope to see you singing at a screen sometime soon.
You probably will.
So now that you've listened to that interview by Courtney E. Smith, there's only one logical thing that you, the loyal listener, should do right now. Open your web browser on your computer, your phone, your tablet, or anything else that connects to this wonderful thing called the World Wide Web. Type in www.sungpoorly.com. And on there, you're going to see something that's called a pod inbox. Down in the bottom right-hand corner, click on that, send us a message, ask a karaoke question, leave a comment, any of those things. We want to answer your questions and give you advice. That's what we're looking for. That's what we need you to do. So head over that way. And if you get bored, you can follow us on all our social media and all the other things. But right now, the big thing is head to the website, leave us a message, ask a question, get advice from those creepy, sexy guys.
And while you're browsing the internet and thinking about us, and thank you for thinking about us, and you have this episode fresh in your mind, please leave us a review about it. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, on Podchaser, on Spotify, on Good Pods. We just really love feedback. It's not surprising that we crave external validation because we've been singing in bars for getting people to clap for 15 years. So give us some of that love. And while you're sharing the love, share some Ben Dumb's way. He gave us all of the music that we use for our show. He is a good pal, a great musician, and you can follow him at the Ben Dumb 3 on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you get those tunes jammed into your ear holes.
Speaking of things you can jam into your ear holes, make sure to tune in 2 weeks from now when we bring a guy behind an audio drama who loves karaoke as much as we do. And who knows? Maybe there will be some fallout from that talk. Get it, Ice? You all saw the way I'm beside. Okay, that's it. That's all. There is no more. So until next time, I'm Adam Wainwright.
I'm Ed Kennard.
And remember that singing off key is still technically singing. Gasoline.
the communal experience when it happens that way.
Oh. Casey wanted to get involved too. She was like, I agree.
Third time's a charm.